show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Thanks for joining us. We are back once again with the program. We're here to help you out as best we can to help you get to and through and beyond your retirement years. That's what we do here on the program. Once again, our professor, Rick Plum, back in studio with us. He's here joining us from Lucia Capital Group, standing by ready to take your phone calls and your emails. Coming up for a segment or two, you never know. We'll see how this goes. We're going to be talking about selling your home. And I would say no, not necessarily selling your specific home, but rather some things that you should be aware of if you're putting your primary residence on the market. There are a lot of good tax benefits with owning a home, and there are some tax benefits too with selling a home. Now, you may have known, or I don't know, maybe you didn't, that you might be able to exclude up to $500,000 of capital gains from the sale of your residence. That's right. And you may even be able to claim some of that tax-free gain if your property was at one time a rental. So think about that. Also, how does selling investment property figure into all this? Well, it does somewhere. We're going to talk about that with Professor Plum coming up in just a moment or two. Now, our lines are open. Our number here in the studio, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Show's just getting started for today. So right now, we got every line open for you. So here's my advice. Take advantage of the opportunity. You call the show. You ask your money question, whether it has to do with sales of homes, retirement, doesn't matter. We're here to answer it for you. You can also send us your emails, wealthed.com, at the Find Your Answer link, which you'll see there near the top of the page. Find your answer at wealthed.com. Now, Professor Plum here with me once again, certified financial planner. He's here courtesy of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group. And we thank them for sponsoring this hour of the show once again. And they remind you that your retirement needs are naturally a whole lot different from anyone else's. No two situations are alike. Keep that in mind. It's important that you have a retirement plan that focuses specifically on your goals as an individual. And with Lucia Capital Group, you do have access to an entire network of brain trust advisors. And of course, they're ready to help you out. You can call them directly off the air at 800-644-1150. 800-644-1150. You can schedule an appointment to see where you and your retirement plan stand, or if you just want to ask a money question. Either way, 800-644-1150. The important number right now, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. I said we got all the lines open, so give us a call with whatever question you have regarding your money. And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about this hour once again. We're going to start, as I said, with selling a primary residence. You know, Professor Plum, for a number of years, it was the case that if you wanted to exclude any capital gains that you had from your home and you were under the age of 55, I believe is what it was, you had to buy something that was equal
or
to
greater
than in value.
You didn't exclude the gain. You deferred the gain.
Yeah.
You basically rolled your original basis into the new house.
You didn't have to pay it, and at some point, you know,
equal or greater value.
Yeah.
But then once you got to 55, they gave you a chance to step down, you know, downsize your property, and they let you buy an equal or lesser value home and actually exclude up to $125,000 of gain. But you can only do that once in your lifetime. And if either spouse had done it, and then, so if you know, a single individual does it when they're 62 years old, gets married to somebody at age 65, and they move into the new spouse's house, and that spouse has never taken the exclusion. Doesn't matter. They're married now. Done. Can't do it. Well, luckily, we got rid of that complicated, convoluted rule back in 1997, and we have a new rule. And we've had this new rule, as I mentioned, for many, many years now, almost a couple decades, where you can exclude up to $250,000 of gain at any age. You don't have to buy another property. You just have to have used it, the property you sold, as your primary residence for 24 months of the 60 months preceding sale. So that's basically what's going on.
Two out of the last 5 years. Now, $250,000, that's just for a single individual.
Right, and a married couple can get away with excluding up to $500,000 of the gain from any taxation.
I like to talk about the origins of this, because what this what this came out of was the
politics.
The 1996 presidential campaign.
You
had Bob Dole on the Republican side. You had Bill Clinton on the Democratic side. And Bob Dole came up with the idea during the campaign, or somebody did in his camp. They came on and they said, He said, I have an idea. Bob Dole is going to offer you $250,000.
On the sale of the house
instead of $125,000. Keep in mind, at that time, housing prices were going up as the dot-com boom happened and people started selling homes. And, you know, it was just a way to help people, I guess, keep the money. So, $250,000. Now, Bill Clinton, being the Clinton politician that this guy is, never one to back away from
the
prevailing winds of the time, came on and said, well, how about this? $250,000 per person. So if you're a married couple sharing a home, living in the home together, you can exclude up to $500,000. That's $200,000 each.
And being a smart politician on the other side, Mr. Dole said, sounds good to me. Let's go.
And so they did. And very quickly, I mean very quickly, this became law as of 1997.
Yeah, the beginning of 1997, May 6th, mm-hmm. actually. So we've had this law for some time now. It's had a couple of changes over the years, but the core portion of it still remains. If you sell your primary residence for, you know, whatever the case is, the first $250,000 of gain for a single individual, the first $500,000 of gain for a married couple filing a joint return, can be excluded from taxation. It doesn't show up. It just doesn't exist. It's tax-free. And so that can work out very, very well.
Yeah. So especially if you've owned a home for a long time. I mean, let's say you bought a home a long time ago for $100,000 and you and your spouse have been living in it the entire time, and you sell it for $600,000, say 20, 30 years later, whatever it is.
Right.
You have a $500,000 capital gain, which upon the sale, fulfilling everything that we just said, totally tax-free to you. You can take the cash and run.
Right. Now, a lot of people get confused between the term gain and proceeds, the sale proceeds. You take that person that bought the house, you know, 30 years ago for $100,000 and is selling it for maybe more. I was talking to somebody the other day who bought a house for roughly that amount and is selling it for $1 million, a little over $1 million, but call it $1 million net of selling expenses. You are allowed to take off the cost to sell the property, you know, the brokerage commissions and things like that. So they sold it for $1 million net of selling expenses. They paid $100,000 way back when. But through the years, they've refinanced it a few times and they've pulled some money out of it from time to time. Mm-hmm. And they still owe, call it $400,000. So they receive a check for $600,000. They believe that that's their gain. They sold it for $1 million. They paid off the loan, they paid off the broker, and they received a check. Their net proceeds from the sale was $600,000 on the $1 million sale. Unfortunately, that's not the issue. Now, they were thinking that they would be able to exclude $500,000 of the gain, which is correct, and they would only have to pay tax on $100,000 of the gain. Unfortunately, that's not correct. They paid $100,000 for it. They don't have any receipts or anything that shows what they did as far as repairs, and they really didn't do much in the way of remodeling it over the years. Their basis is still $100,000. The amount of the loan means nothing when it comes to calculating tax basis, when it comes to calculating taxable or realized gain. In that example, their gain is still $900,000.
Yeah.
They can offset $500,000 of it because they use it as their primary residence. But the other $400,000 of gain is still taxable.
Yes, it's somebody who has, to make it a similar example, if not the same, somebody who bought a house for $100,000 years ago. It's now worth $1 million over uh-huh. the year just from gain. But over the years, they borrowed, refinanced, and so
that's exactly what's happening.
Ultimately, they wind up the day before they sell, they've still got this house they paid $100,000 for. They have an $800,000 loan on it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, just to give you the example, $800,000 they still owe because they borrowed, took money out, whatever they happen to do. They sell it for $1 million. They don't have a $200,000 gain because they paid off the $800,000 loan. They still have a $900,000 gain.
So
even though they actually got only $200,000 in their pocket.
So they sell the property. They think they're going to have a bunch, you know, that $200,000 to invest, maybe put down another house. But the reality is, they're going to have to pay tax on $400,000 because the first $500,000 is excluded. Tax on $400,000, even at the 15% bracket, we're talking a decent amount of money, $60,000 in tax. That's only at the federal level. If they happen to live in a state like California or one of the other states that has a tax on gains, there's another tax. And so they end up with maybe half of what they thought they were going to end up with before.
Yeah, so it could be, you know, the interesting thing about this is, if you keep borrowing out of your home, there could be somebody who has bought a home for $100,000, sell it for $1 million, and they wind up losing money on the deal after taxes.
Oh yes, very much, very easily. But now, no, they don't lose money, because they pulled money out of the property. They've already pulled their gain out.
But that
they have their
gone.
Gain. They took their gain early.
That money's gone. It's money they had to borrow.
But they
and
took
pay
it
back.
Out.
Well, they had to. They didn't get to keep it. They only borrowed.
Sure, they
it.
Got to keep it.
No, they had to pay it back.
No, they haven't paid it back yet.
Well, but once the sale goes through, once they've paid back what they borrowed, there's nothing left. In fact, they may wind up, you know, owing beyond that. But I know what you're saying. Okay, some of the rules to these home sales, we'll get into that. Anything else that you want to talk about, has to do with home sales or not, doesn't matter. Lines are open now. Call now. Brain Trust standing by. 877-PLANNER, 877-PLANNER. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Bucket Strategy Investing, we need you to call right now. 877-PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Lines open right now. And wealthed.com, that's our website if you want to email us at the Find Your Answer link. Also, speaking of WealthEd, this is your chance once again to meet the Brain Trust in person, Portland, Oregon. That happens this Saturday, just a couple of days away. Join the Brain Trust in Portland, Tigard, any of the surrounding areas. They'll be there this Saturday talking to you about retirement income strategies. And yes, answering all of your money questions. You got to ask them. They'll answer them for you this Saturday. Go to wealthed.com, our website, WEALTH, wealthed.com, and join the Brain Trust this Saturday in Portland. After that, Houston, Texas, Saturday, April 9th. And then a few weeks after that, Santa Clara, California. That's at the end of April on the 30th. So mark that down. Portland, Houston, Santa Clara, the next three. Check wealthed.com for all of the cities that you're going to see us in. And of course, if we're not there where you are, let us know. We'll add you to the list probably in the fall. Once again, criteria, good restaurants, good weather. I mean, for that time of year, you know. That's it. That's all. That's all I'm going to say. All right, 877-PLANNER. Okay, so on selling the home, let's go over, once again, some of the rules. You can exclude $250,000 for single people, up to $500,000 of gain if you're married. Let's go over again, though. There are certain restrictions apply.
Well, you have to use it as your primary residence. Now, for a married couple, both people, to be able to get the $500,000 exclusion, both people have to use it as their primary residence for two of the last 5 years, 24 of the last 60 months. But it doesn't have to be in both persons' names as far as ownership. One person could be an owner and the other just one name on it, and then the other person, as long as they're living there, and they file a joint return in the year that they sell the property, you can get the $500,000 on that issue. Now, you can't sell a property, you know, let's say I have a property I've lived in for quite some time, or at least 2 years, I've got some gain in it. I decide I want to sell it, so I buy a new property and move into the new property, and then it takes me a couple of months to sell the old property. So I sell the old property finally. I do exclude the gain on that. And this new property, it just appreciates like crazy. And I live in it for just 2 years, and in the 25th month, somebody comes by and offers me, you know, makes an offer I just cannot refuse. And I sell it, but I now cannot use the exclusion again, because it took me a couple months. I have to also have more than 24 months between sales to be able to use it, the exclusion again. Mm-hmm. Now, as long as I wait at least 24 months from the last sale date and sell the property 25 months after the last sale date, which may be more than 24 months that I've lived in it, I can use the exclusion again. As long as there's 2 years, 24 months between the sales, I can use this up to $500,000, $250,000, up to $500,000 exclusion as many times as I want. and there's no requirement that I buy another property.
Now, people use this, or did at one time, and I guess still can.
Well, it used to be a great idea for people that wanted to get out of being landlords.
They have 5 rental properties, let's say, and they've owned them for a long time. They've been collecting rents, and they would like to sell each one of those properties, and they got quite a bit of gain. So the strategy used to be
that you sell the primary residence you're in now, mm-hmm. move into one of your rentals, live in it for at least two years since the last sale, move into another one, sell it as a primary residence, and just leapfrog at least 2 years of living in it and at least 2 years between sales, mm-hmm. and every 2 years and a couple of months, I'm selling a property and excluding up to $500,000. Now, any depreciation that I've taken since May 7th of 1997, I do still have to pay taxes on the depreciation recapture, but I could get rid of a lot of potential gain. That worked really well right up until about 2009, and they changed the rules on us. They said any period of time that the property is not your primary residence after 2008 is going to count against you. So if you have a property that you've owned for a period of time and you've owned it as something other than a primary residence, a vacation property, a rental property, whatever the case may be, if it's not your primary residence, it's going to count against you. Mm-hmm. They look at how much time you've owned the property after 2008 where it was not your primary residence, and they divide that by then how much time you've actually owned it. That resulting percentage, that percentage of the gain cannot be excluded by the primary residence exclusion.
Is there simple math? Because it's hard to
sure.
it's hard to
how many
envision
months?
This.
How many months has it been not your primary residence after 2008? So if you bought it at January 1, 2009, you owned it for all of 2009, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. So that's 7 years. Let's say all the way through 2016, it was a rental property. The beginning of 2017, you move into it and live in it for 2 years. You've now owned it for 10 years. All of that time is after 2008. You sell it and you're going to claim the primary residence exclusion because you have lived in it for 24 months as your primary residence, and those 24 months did come in the last 60 months of ownership. So it does qualify for the exclusion. However, only 20% of the gain can be excluded, because in that example, I owned it for 8 years after 2008 as something other than my primary residence. I owned it for a total of 10 years. 8 divided by 10 gives me 80%. 80% of the gain is going to be attributable to the non-primary residence use. The other 20% is primary residence. So if I had a gain of $100,000, let's say I had a gain of $500,000, I will not be able to exclude all $500,000. I will only be able to exclude $100,000 of the gain, 20% of the gain. Even though I have a $500,000 exclusion, and I actually have a $500,000 gain, and I lived in it for 24 months of the preceding 60 months from sale, I have to prorate the gain because of the non-primary residence use. Now, they don't look at time prior to 2009 on that non-primary residence use. So if I bought a property in 1980 that's been a rental all the way up until now, and then I move into it and sell it, all I have to do is count the number of months after 2008 that it was a non-primary residence, divided by, I still get to use the entire ownership period. So in that case, if I've owned a property for a very, very long time, I'm going to get a much higher percentage of the gain excluded because of the way the math works, because they're only counting months after 2008 on the non-primary residence use side, but they are still counting all months of ownership. So it does get complicated.
So what you need to know is that if you've had a home that you've used as, say, a rental property, you've been the landlord but you haven't lived in it, and you decide that you want to move into it to exclude some of the gain, potentially get rid of some of the tax bill, just know that you're not going to likely be able to exclude all of it.
Now, the other curious side is they're only looking at non-primary residence use time before you set it up as your primary residence. So if I've owned a property for a long time, or not a long time, for 2 years, and I move out of it and use it as a rental for up to three years, mm-hmm. they don't count that time after the period.
It's only
they only
before.
Count the time before it.
which really makes things easy, doesn't it? Really makes it easy to understand.
Isn't it fun to know taxes?
Okay, 877-PLANNER. I had a couple of emails on this particular topic, so we'll get to those when we come back and take some phone calls. I know folks are curious about this. Anything else you want to talk about? Lines are open right now. Give us a call. Keep the brain trust busy. 877-PLANNER, our number. PLANNER. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group. We are coming right back. Oh, wait. One more measure. Here we go. Stand by. There it is. But don't you have to play it with the roundhouse?
Oh, you got to get the big roundhouse.
Yeah,
there.
Like I know guitar. You know, what do I know? 877-PLANNER, PLANNER, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, answering your money questions, playing some great tunes, and getting you through the hour. We're going to take more of your calls. I said we've also got a couple of emails on this topic, so we'll get to everybody. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. Let's move along next to Jim in Atlanta, Georgia. Hi, Jim.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Very well. How can we help you today?
I love your show. I've done a fair amount of real estate investing. I hope the lady told you I've got a broken tooth, so I'm not speaking very well, so bear with me.
That's all right.
And ironically, I am I love to listen to it. I am sitting in the parking lot of the apartment I'm likely to move into when I get divorced. Okay. And I've owned a home for 20 years. The mortgage is just about paid off. We've got a couple of years left. And our discussion is to stay, keep the home until our kids get out of high school, which is a couple of years out, which is about the time the mortgage burns off. And I'm sitting here thinking, gee, if I move out before, you know, the mortgage burns off and before we sell the house, how does that impact my ability to take my share of $500,000 in gain, which fortunately we've got a pretty solid gain, so...
Well, if the divorce states that they're going to keep the house, you're going to keep the house. Well, you're not living in it, but your spouse is going to live in it with the kids and all that. If because of the divorce, the house is going to be maintained, you can still treat that time that you're not even allowed to sell it, basically because of the divorce, as you're still living in it. So at that point, you can, even though it's been more than 2 years since you've moved out, you can treat it as you living in the house because the divorce says it this way. So you'll be able to use the $500,000 even more than 2 years after you move out of the house, as long as it's required by the divorce.
Okay, but the point is you would have to get the judge to kind of state that and so forth. Is that
yeah,
right?
I mean, I'm sure
that would have to be part of the divorce agreement.
The divorce attorneys know how to do all this. This is not new to them. So, yeah.
Yeah, but, okay. That's my next meeting tomorrow, so
yeah.
I'm doing apartments today, and that will follow, so...
But you can preserve your side of the $250,000 exclusion, even though you're not technically living in the house, as long as it's a requirement of the divorce.
As long as it's part of the agreement that I'm okay and we could... Well, and that's kind of my fear, is that we get out 2 or 3 years out and all of a sudden she decides she wants to stay in next year or the kids can get in college and all that kind of stuff, you know. So
yeah.
I'm just wondering if there's some kind of delay, you know, that happens. That
there is a delay.
This way, I'd love to sell it.
Yeah, there is a delay with the divorce.
Okay. All right. Good deal. Thanks. Great show, guys.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Thanks for the call. And good luck to you. Let us know how that turns out.
It's an interesting concept, but if it's being required to be maintained, and this is a very common issue where
yes.
we want to keep the kids in the house, in the neighborhood that they're growing up and mm-hmm. going to the same schools and things. But then what happens if I've moved out and it's 3, 4, 5 years later,
and
the kids are now out of school, now we can sell it.
Yeah.
And I still own half of it. But
right.
You
don't meet the test, right? Yeah.
The divorce doesn't help, but the divorce will
That's
allow
right. but
for.
It's good. Make sure the lawyer should make sure that is part of it, and generally it is.
Yeah.
But you know, it's a good idea to check. Okay, Las Vegas. Shiva is up next. Hi, Shiva.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Quick question. I just recently got a job in Vegas. I'm planning to move here. I'm from Sacramento, California. I have a primary residence there. That's my only residence. Lived there for 16 years. So wondering if I should sell the home and move here or rent it and then buy a home here in Vegas.
Well, do you want to be a landlord?
I don't like to be, no.
Then sell it.
Okay. So that's an easy answer then. All
let
right.
me, Yeah, I mean, you could potentially rent it out for up to just shy of 3 years and still sell it before the end of that period of time and exclude the gain that you've been able to achieve on that. But how, I mean, maybe you can find a property manager. You know, maybe it can help you. You know, if you think property values are going to go up tremendously over the next 1 to 2 years, but now you're a long distance manager. Now you're a long distance owner.
Right.
If you don't want to be a landlord, take the gain that you have and thank heavens you've got it. Bank it until you find a place you want to live and buy in Vegas.
Okay. I appreciate that advice. Thank you very much.
All right, Shiva, thank you for the call. Yeah, I think he's on the fence on that.
Right.
And, but he says he doesn't really want to be a landlord. He'd been thinking about it.
Right. And so, I mean, a lot of people look at it and say, because I've had the house for this long, my payments are X and I can rent it out for a lot more. Okay. I mean, that's fine. And if you want to do that, that's fine. You do have a short period of time, a couple of years that you can do that and still maintain the primary residence.
Three years. You would have 3 years.
You have to sell it before the end of the third year.
Yes. You have to be completed.
Out of it.
Docs signed and all that stuff. So a lot of people like to maybe put it on the market after 2 years.
And other people don't want to be a landlord at all.
In spite of the cash flow it could create.
Or the headache.
Although, of course, they do have
property managers. Yeah.
You know, which might be worth the extra expense. Okay. Let's see. 877 Planner. We now have two lines open. 877-PLANNER, El Dorado, California. Michael is up next. Hi, Michael. How can we help you today?
Hi, guys. I'm currently living in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, and I'm retired, and my wife is going to retire this year. We have a home that we purchased in El Dorado in 1985. We've never rented it out. We just kind of use it as a second home. Mm-hmm. We were thinking about moving into the El Dorado property and taking the $500,000 exclusion. But now I'm wondering, can we do that?
Well, where do you live right now?
You live in the
San Francisco Bay Area.
Okay, so the Bay Area. So you're going to sell the house in the Bay Area and move to El Dorado.
No, we're not going to sell it. My daughter's going to move in and take care of this house.
Okay, where's the sale coming from? Where's the $500,000 coming from?
Well, we wanted to sell the El Dorado property.
Oh, the one you haven't lived in?
Right.
Well, then you're not going to get the exclusion. It's not your primary residence.
Well, we want to move into it.
Okay.
After we retire and live in it for 2 years.
Okay. You will be able to get at least a good portion of it excluded. They're going to, you know, go through this proration that I talked about before. Luckily, you've owned it for, you know, 23 years before the 2008 time horizon. So the majority of the gain will be eligible for the exclusion. How much gain do you have?
Probably $500,000.
Okay, the majority of that gain will be able to be excluded from tax. What you're going to do is count up the number of months between the end of 2008, so starting January 2009, until the month you move into it. How many months does that, you know, total up to? I don't know when you're going to move into it. And then you total up the number of months that you owned it all the way back to 1985. You do that math. And so that's going to be a fairly, you know, small number comparatively to a fairly large number. It means a small percentage of the gain will not be eligible for the exclusion. The rest of it will be eligible for the exclusion once you've moved into it and lived in it for 2 years.
Oh, okay, got it.
Yeah, it helps. It actually helps that you have owned it
since 85. Yeah.
Yeah. If you bought this, you know, in 2009, you would have a lot
different game plan.
Yeah, the percentage would be different, and you wouldn't be able to exclude nearly as much as you can for having owned it for so long.
Okay, I got it. Hey, thanks, guys.
Okay, Michael, thank you for the call. And that's why we're talking about this, because, you know, as simple as the concept might seem, there are, you know, there are different arms to this particular spider that create some confusion, some different issues. Once again, Professor Plum, since the laws changed starting in 2009, it made it a little bit more difficult.
Right. You've got to do this strange math. And like I said, but in his advantage is that he does not count all the years, all the months prior to 2009 as non-primary residence.
That's as if he had actually lived there.
Right. Whether he did or didn't, it doesn't
matter.
So they're going to, but for the ownership owner side of it, they use all the months. So 85, he's owned it for 32 and a half years now.
Call it 32 years.
So he moves into it at the end of this year.
Yeah.
So that's 33 years. He lives in it for two more years. He's owned it for 35 years.
Yes.
Now he's only going to count up the years after 2008. So
9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16.
So 8 out of 35.
That's 25%, less than 25%.
Yeah, so 8 out of 35.
We'll do the math right here.
23% of whatever gain he realizes on that sale will not be excludable. He'll have to pay tax on that 23%. So if he has a $500,000 gain.
Which is not out of the realm of possibility given the Bay Area prices and the fact that he's owned it for 35 years at that
point. He would end up paying tax on $115,000 of the $500,000 of gain. Now, the key here is if he can, by the next 2 years, by the time he moves into it, satisfies it, if he can get up to about $620,000, $670,000 of gain, he'll still get the full $500,000 because the percentage of gain that's excluded
It's based on a larger number. So yeah, it's math.
But get that thing to grow.
It works. That's right. Do what you can to get some. Maybe you can add to the basis, perhaps.
Well, adding to the basis is money out of my pocket.
No, I understand that. But you know, it could you put $30,000 into it, and maybe you can get a $60,000 gain. I don't know. I'm just throwing out ideas. Okay, 877 Planner. We're going to come back. Robert in Henrietta, Oklahoma. You will be next. With your question, hang on. It'll just be a couple of moments here. And just one line open. Grab it while you can. 877-PLANNER. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. We're coming right back. Let me tell you how it will be. You will call. We will answer. It works very simply that way. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group. We're here talking to you about your money, answering your money questions. Another hour is just ahead in many, if not most, cities across the country. So stick around for more of the best in money information. But let's get moving back to the phones. We still have folks on hold. 877-PLANNER, our number. Robert is up next in Henrietta, Oklahoma. Hi, Robert.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing very well, thanks. What's up?
Good. All nothing. Hey, I just calling. I very seldom ever call into one of these places, but half the time I never thought it was beneficial until I actually needed to call in.
Well, that's why we're here. What's up?
Recently, my father and mother has passed away and left all of their possessions and me and my brother's possessions. And we have having to go through a probate and all that good stuff. You know how that is.
Yep, right.
And so anyway, my mother and father had a store that they had built, and they had after my mother passed away, my dad just didn't want to keep it running no more. So there was some people that wanted to purchase it and convert it into a living quarters, into a house.
Okay.
And so now then, there's a little disagreement on a few things that we've been trying to iron out, but they're wanting us to purchase the property back off of them. And you know, the idea and the attitude that I have is, why would I want to purchase something that I already own?
Well, no, you don't own it. Your dad sold it to them.
Well, we're doing a contract for deed,
and
that's what it is. You know, the way I look at that is I'm like a bank holder,
right?
And I hold the mortgage on it until the mortgage is paid in full.
Yeah,
right. But you don't own the title to it. You only own the mortgage.
Well, everything is still in our name.
So you were leasing it to, or your dad leased it to them, until some certain criteria were met, and then the title would transfer at that time. Is that correct?
Right. Right. Right now, all we have is just a contract drawn up that's been notarized.
Okay,
that's
now
all we have.
What does it say about them wanting out of it? Is there anything in there that says they?
Well, it says if they want out of it, they have to restore it back to equal value of the time of purchase.
Okay, so what makes them think that you owe them money, or that you're going to buy them out of it?
Well, they don't want, now that my two brothers has moved on the piece of property there, and they kind of don't want to be there now, because their hopes was to buy some land, more land off of my dad at the time, and and me and my two brothers didn't want to sell nothing. Now, we told them if you'd have had something in writing or something.
Oh, well, that's okay. They don't have that in writing. So, but they still have the lease. It's basically lease to own option. They still have the lease. They're still paying on the lease. And and so they want out of the lease, it sounds like.
Right. Yeah, they want us to buy them out, and I'm
buy them out of
I'm
what?
Not into,
What do they think that you owe them? I mean, they have a lease. They haven't fulfilled their part of it. They've never bought the property. They were leasing it, and they had the right to buy it or to transfer the property if they fulfilled the lease payments.
Right.
Is there anything in the contract that says you have to buy them out, that there's any?
No.
Is there anything that says X amount of dollars of this lease payment was being held as a down payment for the property that they would ever get back?
No.
Or was it a straight lease with a purchase at the end?
Yeah, it was just a straight-up lease. It was X amount of dollars down and so much a month for so long.
And at the end of that period of time, what was supposed to happen?
At the end, after everything was met, then the deed would be that piece, that store, or that building, and a piece of land, I think it's like 0.85 acres, would be deeded over to their name.
Okay, so you in essence, they are paying. It's more than just the lease in this case, because
they're paying a monthly payment.
Right, and so part of that payment is actually a purchase, but and so the reality is they are so if they leave 1 month early, what you're saying is they don't get anything. If they stayed one more month, they get 100% of it at the end of the lease. This one's going to have to go to. You know, the contract wasn't written very well, it doesn't sound like. It didn't have anything that talked about what to do. How much longer does the lease run?
Man, I think it's another 10 or 15 years.
And how long has it been going?
A little over a year.
So they haven't built up all that much in equity. And
no,
so how much are they asking for you to buy them out?
At one point, they wanted $30,000. And now I think it's down to like $15,000.
And how much do they pay every month?
A little over $500.
$500?
Yeah.
So they've paid $6,000 of the last year, and they want you to buy them out for
$15,000? Uh-huh. But they're taking in consideration the work that they've done on the inside.
This one's going to end up in court.
With not a whole lot to jump and shout about. Because it looks like there's more work there now for me to do than what it was if they'd have left it the way it was.
Yeah,
the way it was a completed project.
I mean, you can counter offer and say, look, you've paid $6,000. I'll give you $3,000 to walk away, but that's it. Or, I mean, so this is all going to be negotiated at this point, or it's going to end up in court.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I guess is maybe what you suspected anyway, huh, Robert?
Well, yeah, I kind of figured it'd probably head that direction, but they're wanting to sell it, you know, and if they sell it, then whatever, you bring me my money.
But one out of 15 years, they haven't built up all that much equity, and the fact that they did some work, there was nothing, and this is where the contract fell down, there was nothing in the contract said that they will get paid back if they leave early for the work they've created or the work they've done.
Yeah.
And so the other side of it is, have the work they've done actually increased the value? If the work they've done hasn't increased the value, why do they think they should get paid for it?
Yeah.
So that's something you're going to have to go through and say, look, it was worth X when you took it over. It's now worth X minus, and you want me to pay you for that? No, you just walk away and we'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is all negotiation right now.
Yeah. Hey, listen, Robert. I got to go to the news here. So if you have any more questions, hang on. But it sounds like he's got.
Lease loans are tricky.
Well, they are, and you never know what the actual person who's going in there making the payments wants to do or is going to do with the property. Just because they're doing.
But those should be outlined ahead of time because.
Well, they should be. Then it should have been in the contract. Now it wasn't done, so it's probably why it's going to wind up in court. Hang on, Robert, if you have any other questions. Eric in Portland, don't go away. I'm going to give you all the time you need to ask your question. Just if you can hang for just a couple of minutes here, that would be great. We will get to you next, I promise. If you need the brain trust off the air, Professor Plum or any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group, their off-air number is 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. Another hour is just ahead. More of your phone calls when we come back right here on Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.